potem se je osrečil, što če je ta nepravodnjana Mašija, dojete, da Radha Šiva Sanidov, da tako ne ti. Še že Radha Krišna Gorba Pomina Šankom, da tako ne ti od nama ti. Šri Vrindavan Tama ti, Šri Majepur Tama ti. Ganga Majke, Ganga Majke, Bhakti Devike, Vasi Devike, Sama Vita, Bhakti Devike, Jami Tare Gorba Vrindavan. All glories to Sama, all glories to all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glories to Sri Guru. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Aham.
Aham.
I.
I.
Upcha avachai.
Upcha avachai.
With various.
With various.
Graviai.
Graviai.
Paraphernalia.
Paraphernalia.
Kriyaya.
Kriyaya.
By religious rituals.
By religious rituals.
Utpannaya.
Utpannaya.
Accomplish.
Accomplish.
Anake.
Anake.
O sinless mother.
O sinless mother.
Na.
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 Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Tushye.
Tushye.
And please.
And please.
Archita.
Archita.
Worship.
Worship.
Archayam.
Archayam.
In the form.
In the form.
Bhutagrama.
Bhutagrama.
For other living entities. Avamanina.
Avamanina.
With those who are disrespectful.
With those who are disrespectful.
Translation. My dear mother, even if he worships with proper rituals and paraphernalia, a person who is ignorant of my presence in all living entities never pleases me by the worship of my deities in the temple. Purport. There are 64 different prescriptions for worship of the deity in the temple. There are many items offered to the deity, some valuable and some less valuable. It is prescribed in Bhagavad Gita, quote, if a devotee offers me a small flower, a leaf, some water, or a little fruit, I will accept it. The real purpose is to exhibit one's loving devotion to the Lord. The offerings themselves are secondary. One has not developed loving devotion to the Lord and simply offers many kinds of foodstuffs, fruits, and flowers without real devotion. The offering will not be accepted by the Lord. We cannot bribe the personality of Godhead. He is so great that our bribery has no value, nor has he any scarcity, since he is full in himself. What can we offer him? Everything is produced by him. We simply offer to show our love and gratitude to the Lord. This gratitude and love for Krishna is exhibited by a pure devotee, who knows that the Lord lives in every living entity. As such, temple worship necessarily includes distribution of prasada. It is not that one should create a temple in his private apartment or private room, offer something to the Lord, and then eat. Of course, that is better than simply cooking foodstuffs and eating without understanding one's relationship with the Supreme Lord. People who act in this manner are just like animals. But the devotee who wants to elevate himself to the higher level of understanding must know that the Lord is present in every living entity. And as stated in the previous verse, one should be compassionate to other living entities. A devotee should worship the Supreme Lord, be friendly to persons who are on the same level, and be compassionate to the ignorant. One should exhibit his compassion for ignorant living entities by distributing prasad. Distribution of prasad to the ignorant masses of people is essential for persons who make offerings to the personality of God. Real love and devotion is accepted by the Lord. Many valuable foodstuffs may be presented to a person, but if the person is not hungry, all such offerings are useless for him. Similarly, we may offer many valuable items to the deity, but if we have no real sense of devotion and no real sense of the Lord's presence everywhere, then we are lacking in devotional service. In such a state of ignorance, we cannot offer anything acceptable to the Lord. So here then we're seeing the points being made by Kupila Muni himself in the discussing about the process of devotional service. That, and Srila Prabhupada is then expanding on that, that the devotion to the Lord is actually what's being expressed. And that devotion that is expressed through a medium. So the medium is the ritual. So the ritual is important in that you need it to express. You can't, it's how do you express without a ritual? It's not possible. So, therefore, the ritual is important, but not as in, but it has no meaning if the purpose of the ritual is not expressed, is not obtained. So here then, we are performing all the nice rituals, but if there's no devotion to the Lord, then how will that be pleasing to the Lord? How will the ritual please the Lord? Right? Because the ritual itself will be some manifestation or some exchange of opulence, but the Lord has everything. It's all His anyway. So then what's important is the devotion in which it's offered. Right? The parent has the whole house. They have the yard. They have the bushes and the trees. And the small child goes out into the yard, picks a dandelion or something like that, and brings it in and gives it to the mother. The mother's pleased. Why would she be pleased? It's her dandelion anyway. And not only that, what's the big deal about dandelions? Okay, a dozen won't shed roses. We can start discussing, but a dandelion? Right? But, so the point is that it has been offered with devotion. And that devotion is what is pleasing. Right? So relationships are based on that mood, that attitude, that devotion, that affection, that expression. So, therefore, that is what the Lord's looking for. Now, if someone has this devotion to Him, then that means that he, as a person, has his own perspective. And his perspective is that all living entities are part and parcel of Him. All living entities should be engaged or connected with Him. So that's what He's trying to do. He's created the world. He's given the Vedas. He sends the Acharyas. He's given the process of devotional service. He's given the whole social system. He's given everything here that we can interact with for the purpose of coming back to Him. So if that is understood, that this is what He desires as a person, we would then be trying to do the same thing ourselves in whatever way or whatever capacity we can. So then that means that one has to start with the point of seeing the Lord in the heart, being able to see the Lord everywhere. If you can't do that, your devotional service will be stunted in some area. Because of our conditioned nature, there are areas that we're very comfortable with, areas that we're not comfortable with. So as soon as an area that we're comfortable with, yes, we're happy, Krishna conscious, everything's great, you know, we're happy. Everyone we see, oh, we're nice to, right? But if we're not happy, we're not nice to anybody, right? So it's not dependent upon our God consciousness, it's dependent on how we feel. So here, then, and why is that? Because we see the world through our perspective. Naturally, we're going to have a perspective, but if that exclusively is the point of view, that's going to be a problem. Right? It's going to be a difficulty, because then what happens is now, according to our conditioned nature, we have many things that are, you know, impurities in the heart. And those impurities in the heart take the form of dharma, artha, karma, or moksha. Right? If those things are connected to the Lord, they become purifying, they become uplifting. But if they're not connected to the Lord, they bind us to the world. So that means they're an impurity, they're an imperfection. So then in that imperfect state, that area of importance to us that we're not connecting to the Lord, if it happens to somehow or another be something that's not unfavorable devotional service, it won't get in the way. But if it is, then, you know, just as the Samartha Brahmins are attached to the elements of the form of dharma and therefore miss the actual relationship with others and with the Lord, it's only based on ritual, that's a problem. In the same way, if we drop it down, understand that the smartest, we bet not the smartest, but understand that they're human beings. If someone is a smarta, he is a human being because he's following Varnashram. You know, that should first be noted. If you don't follow Varnashram, you're less than a human being. So that means then if you're dropping down into artha, which is morality and ethics, justice and economics, which is a way, basically, what we are proud of calling the Western world, it's subhuman. So you're already starting from a lower position, right? And then, if those get in the way of our devotional service, all we can see is economics, how someone's using their money and this and that, how someone's going around in the world, like that. Then that is getting in the way of our devotional service. It's an anartha. It's not devotional service because we're not seeing Krishna in it. And it doesn't matter if everybody agrees with it. It doesn't matter. That's the fun part. It's because all that actually matters is Krishna's opinion. Right? Prabhupada says so many times, you can get a million fools together and they can say something's the truth, but it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Right? And as devotees, generally, we always, with, you know, sense gratification is not looked upon kindly. Even engaging the senses in Krishna's service isn't looked upon kindly. So anything with the senses. So our impersonal, immaturity gets in the way of actually even proper dealings with other people. And then the desire for liberation, getting out of the material world, that can also get in the way because we think devotion, if I do this, I become purified, I get out of the material world, I'm free from material consciousness. Yes, you will be. But what has that got to do with devotion to Krishna? Right? Of course, to be have prema, you have to be out of the material world. But which is first? The prema or getting out of the material world? Which is the prominent, which is the priority? Therefore, the emphasis on the devotional aspect, that has to be there. If it emphasizes something else, anything else, it's actually not devotional. So generally, see, there's two main perspectives that are taken when we're explaining devotional service. One we like to hear, one we absolutely generally don't like to hear. Unless, of course, it's about someone else, then it's fine. Right? The first perspective we can say is, is embodied, you could say, in Baladeva Devotion. That's the one we like. Prabhupada's Gita is based on his commentaries. He has everybody else's, but the flavor means anything in connection with Krishna in any way, shape, or form is encouraged, and so it's taken as devotional service. So even the most neophyte devotee doing the most neophyte activity, it's encouraged and applauded because it is in connection to Krishna, so it's glorious. And that platform is a very glorified platform. That's the preaching platform. Now, if everything's going nice, everything's very pleasant and that, then this is the perspective that's used because it is the best perspective for encouraging others, for preaching, for expanding the movement. But in case it's not going well, we're not seeing things in such a positive light, we see in a negative light, then we want to see negative, then we'll bring out, then we have negative. Right? God makes a point here. If it's not done with the mood of affection, don't even think for a second that you're doing anything devotional. In other words, the bottom line, if it's not prema, it's not bhakti. That's the bottom line. So therefore, unless someone's on the platform of prema, he can never become proud and think, yes, I'm nicely situated in devotional service. That's Vishwanath's point. Because he gives very analytical aspects of devotional service to make sure that we're not, in our own folly, making a mistake in devotional service and claiming that it's devotional service. You know, just like the smartest will claim it's devotional service because they are performing their ritual nicely. But technically it's not devotional service. In the same way, those who jump up and down about economics, why this one has money, why that one has money, why we don't have the money, it's not devotional service. As much as the smart isn't devotional service, this focus on economics is not devotional service. Or is ethics. Oh, they're bad, he did this, he did that, he's eternally damned. Like that. It's not devotional service. It just isn't. No ifs, no ands, no buts. It just is not devotional service. Right? And engaging the sense is not connected, it's not devotional service. Trying to get out of the material world, purify yourself, elevate yourself, it is not connected to Krishna in consciousness, it's not devotional service. So this has to be pointed out now and again. It's not done very often, because otherwise we get discouraged. But it, now and again, it has to be pointed out because our ego gets in the way. And we think, because I thought it, I'm a devotee and I thought something, it's devotional service automatically. And the longer I've been around, then the more it's devotional service. But actually, it has nothing to do with that. Devotional service means devotion. And there's service done to express the devotion. That's the meaning. It's pretty direct. Right? Devotional service, it's not ethical things that are supposedly supposed to be elevating service. Right? Or being very correct and prim and proper with all our economics to both and service. Or not engaging myself in any, my senses in anything that I'd actually like to, so I don't do it as service. Or getting out of the material world service. No, it's devotional service. So these points are pointed out. He's given a very nice, in the previous chapter, an encouragement on devotional service. But now, having done that, now he has to make sure that things don't go haywire by getting distracted by the form. The form is the method of worship, but the form itself is not worship. Therefore, then, here, Kapila Muni is making that say, if you don't see the Lord in their heart, if you're not seeing the Lord everywhere, you have a problem. You know, just like, let's say, you know, make it obvious. You know, you have always this, you know, concept on the international, that the international somehow or another is the perfect viewpoint, and that the Indians somehow or another don't have the right viewpoint. Right? So therefore, let's say in a place like Mayapur or Vrindavan, then you have to have that international viewpoint by bringing in somebody from an international country. Right? International, read America, England, or Australia. Because Poland is not international, nor is Hungary. Ukraine? What about Oman? Kampuchea? No. And even there, if we really want to do it, it's only America. Correct. If we really want to do it. So, therefore, is that actually what Kapila Muni is talking about? Then we're seeing souls according to a particular cultural covering. Because what is the culture? It's simply economics. Justice and so-called morality, where it's good for justice. I mean, where it's good for economics. And then whatever is to be gained from the local people here in the way of their, you know, respective authority, their simplicity, their ability to work with others and have actual personal relationships, have social interaction, all the things that the Westerners completely lack at, that had nothing to gain there. Nothing to gain. So, therefore, the problem comes up is that what this is actually a manifestation of the negative point of this verse. We're not seeing Paramatma everywhere. We're not seeing. It's that simple. Like that. And why I gave this, because this is a regular, ongoing concept. You know, it's not some obscure thing. It's something very real in our life. And because of that, then we miss the point. But that's why he gives this point. Because this means you're seeing everything. When he says everything, he means it. These aren't things he just says. And he's already taken it now to the second stage of seeing the Paramatma everywhere. Previous chapters, he already explained how you see him as Brahman everywhere. In other words, everything you see is Krishna. Then, whatever you see, then there's an interaction. So that interaction is because of Paramatma. Right? It's just, you know, the thing as it is, the matter as it is, that's Brahman. So, and that's where we start this process of self-realization. So now he's bringing it to the Paramatma stage. And why that? This is a net, actually, just to catch us when we fall from the platform of Bhagavan. Because Bhagavan is the actual platform we're trying to get to. Because Krishna wants us to preach. Krishna wants us to interact with everyone favorably. Krishna wants us to interact with him with devotion. That's the Bhagavan. That's the personal platform. Then, if one is not able to see like that all the time, at least see Paramatma everywhere, that everything going on is him. And if that's a problem, then if we just see energies and the different things that are happening here, the dynamics, the mechanics in the material world, understand it's Brahman. Like that. But lower than that, then what do you have? Because Dharma, the common moksha, will not cut it. You know, and the eternal argument throwing out Dharma for Artha, that's really not going to cut it. You know, if we had a doubt about Dharma, why not about Artha? So this is a problem. So we have to be very, very careful here that these points are something that we're supposed to contemplate in our own devotional service, our own life. Otherwise, the tendency is, okay, nice philosophy, been there, done that. But the problem is we haven't been there and we haven't done that. Because if we're seeing Paramatma everywhere, then we have gotten past the third canto. If we're not, we haven't been there, done that. We still require it. So that's why this study is so important. To be able to go through. It sounds technical, but the point is it only sounds technical because of the medium. But the point is just as the medium you use, you have to apply it with devotion, all the mediums that you use are already Krishna. So to not see Krishna in it, that's an illusion. Right? So it's already everything already is Krishna. We just have to recognize it. Like that. Krishna is there at all times, all places, all certain. We can see him, we can interact with him. On any of these three platforms. And the ideas we see here is that why these platforms are made so strongly is because otherwise we'll tend to stay on the lower platforms. So without sometimes some strong point being made, we won't elevate ourselves. We'll figure whatever I'm doing is good enough. It's working, it's good enough. But relationships don't work like that. Relationships don't work that they're good enough. Like that. It means your society, why is the society there? The society is there basically because you have a grihastha ashram. If there's no grihastha ashram, you don't generally call it a society. Right? Like that. The sages out in the forest, you know, in Tapaloka, you don't call it society. Like that. So as soon as you introduce family life, then you have a social system. Right? And the basis of family life, the center of it, is the feminine aspect. Masculine exists. So to expand that, then there's the feminine aspect is added to it. So now, and the feminine aspect is known for variety. That's what it does. It's variety. It's constant adjustment and change. That's what creates ongoing happiness. So that in that... Yes. And so in the grihastha ashram, just good enough never works. It has never worked in any marriage in history. So... That gives one a symptom that good enough isn't going to work, especially since it's God interacting with his energies, which means God interacting with his feminine nature. So that means it's constant. And how are we going to serve God directly? No, through that feminine nature. So this ability to understand and appreciate that what I've done today is good, but at the next moment I should improve that. Like that. That then is very important. Otherwise, how do the pastimes go on eternally? How is it Radharani? What does it mean when we say Radharani never cooks the same thing twice for Krishna? What does that mean? Does that mean it just happens? It's just something that she goes in and starts cooking and she forgot something, so it's different this time. Next time she remembers something else. So that made it different. You know, next time the fire wasn't quite right, it got burnt or it was a little undercooked. Is that what it means? No, it means she's really applying her consciousness on how to create something special for Krishna. Right? So that means that's if we want to therefore assist her, that's what we have to do. How to improve it? Right? It's not gross. It's not that today she cooks one thing, next day. It's not today, okay, today we'll cook only potatoes, and then tomorrow we'll cook only, you know, something else. No, it's subtle. So therefore, but the main point is that endeavor has been made to improve it, to develop it. Like that. So if we have that understanding, that determination, then Krishna will give the intelligence. Krishna was mentioning in Gita. If the devotee is sincere, he'll give the intelligence. It doesn't matter if they're purified, not purified. If that sincerity is there, trying to please him, then he from within the heart will remove the impurities. Like that. So this, it's very important to understand that being static never is impressive. One has to be dynamic. So that dynamism means that there has to be a constant awareness, right, of your activities and its relationship to Krishna consciousness. If you're aware of it, constantly aware, it will naturally improve. Because if we're aware, it means we're conscious, we're Krishna conscious, we're in touch with his internal potency. His internal potency is always developing, always expanding. So if we're in touch with that, naturally our service will do the same thing. So it's not difficult. It's very easy. So, but the point is we have to be aware of it. Therefore, in sometimes being so happy and Krishna conscious or so absorbed or, you know, distracted, whatever it is, we may forget this point of trying to be dynamic. So therefore, occasionally then we see that Krishna himself or the acharyas or that bring up these points just to shape our world a little bit so that we don't think I'm already perfect and everything's wonderful. Right? And what they're shaking here is not the form. Right? What, because he said, nice devotion, nice worship is going on. With proper rituals and paraphernalia. It's not that what he's shaking, it's the mentality, the consciousness. Right? So this doesn't mean I've got to change everything. No, it's the consciousness. Everything stays the way it is. Prabhupada said, Krishna Khan doesn't need a change in the environment. It needs a change in your attitude. Then if it necessitates, environment will follow. So these things are there to shape our consciousness, our mentality, our perspective. Not necessarily what we're doing. That way no one has to get worried that there'll be any insecurity by things changing, the form changing. No. Simply the mentality has to change. So this is one of those times then when it, you know, appears to be very rough. But Krishna's only saying it so emphatically because he wants to be able to reciprocate with the devotees in loving exchange. And only as we surrender can he reciprocate. Right? That's the masculine principle. He only as you deal, he responds. So if we're not dealing in a loving way, how is he going to deal with us in a loving way? And he wants to deal with us in a loving way. Therefore, he's so strong on the point to be devotional. Because then he can reciprocate. Right. Any questions or comments? Yes.
One question. There is a shloka in the Bhagavatam says that devotees has any obligations towards the Buddhas and the rishis and so on. But then also we see the other thing that grihasthas have to follow some rules and have to feed people in a large scale and like that. And like there are some duties also, duties like that. What is the story with those people who are brahmacharis? They do not follow one ashram duties, they follow more like Bhagavata Pancharatra. And then they would be like devotees worshipping Riti in the temple. They agree with us, but they maintain by the temple. So should they acquire more from the temple so that they can do more, like in feeding devotees and that kind of things? Or is that what is basically the proper understanding and practice of this? Or brahmacharis who are doing food distribution. For example, they just don't need to do food distribution and they're traveling, but then also sometimes they do some programs. So then what is the proper understanding of this? How much prasadam they have to distribute and what will be that?
In a nutshell is that within the system then devotee then, in one sense, is beyond the system, is not bound by the rules, has no obligations to others, they only have an obligation to the Lord. So then how much are they bound by this? So then we see here is that the Lord has, it's Him that's saying this. In other words, that's the meaning of, means the Gita is expressing the importance of self-realization over material, mundane activity. And so then from that, Arjuna then gets the idea, okay, then spiritual means not mundane. And mundane means anything that I can see and observe and deal with the senses, basically. You know, common mistake like that. Every impersonalist in my body makes that mistake. So, Buddhist also. So then, he then thinks, oh, go to the forest. Krishna says, where are you going? You're going to go back on the battlefield. In the sense that you just told me to give up mundane. Right? So in other words, we are so fixed in the form that the form is the substance. That therefore, if a particular substance in a particular environment or application or usage is not good, then we say anything connected with that is not good. So if we think form is good because through form we can get anything we want, we enjoy, we're happy. So if we point out that form is external and it's not happiness, then our conclusion is then form is useless. No form is of any value. Understand? So Arjuna made that as his first mistake. So then Krishna's trying to point out is no, form is fine if it's connected to Krishna. Form is not fine if it's not connected to Krishna. That's the problem. So it's not that by being connected to Krishna and not having an obligation, you know, on the mundane platform to anybody, doesn't mean that the forms of devotional service aren't practiced. Right? So a grihastha is in that ashram and it has certain forms that go with it. So therefore feeding guests and things like that are part of it, just like we see Srila Prabhupada's father. He was a pure devotee, he's training a pure devotee, and he fed guests. Right? That's so it's part of the expression. Krishna likes that. So brahmacharis may not do that because they don't have the facilities. And it's not that the brahmachari is working on the Bhagavad Pancharatri platform, but that they're a brahmachari, that's big. That they're a celibate student, that's not a rule of Bhagavad Pancharatri. That's a rule of Veda. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that devotees being beyond the rules means they're actually applying the rule. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, okay, the guy is beyond giving roses. What does that mean? It means that the devotion, the love, the affection is so great that whether he gives flowers or not, the purpose of the flowers is obtained. But that doesn't mean he won't give flowers because of the affection, because the flowers are a form in which he can express that affection. He will do that. You know what I'm saying? It's not that because he's beyond it, he doesn't do it. That's also a mistake. It's a Mayavadi-based mistake. Is that if we're beyond the rules, we don't follow them. Like that. Whose rules are they? They're God's rules. Right? The universal laws of the cause of creation, why they won't be followed? God follows them. Right? One of the 64 qualities listed in the Nectar Devotion of Krishna is he follows the injunctions of Shastra. And we all know he's beyond it. In fact, he made the injunctions. But now, that means, so it's like this is the difference. God means you can make the injunctions about things you want to do. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, if we're following God, then we follow those injunctions because that's what he likes to do. Otherwise, why would God make an injunction he doesn't like? But he's God. He doesn't have to. Does that make sense? So the basic principle is that what we're trying to catch here is the simultaneous separation and non-separation between the form and the mood. The form is important, but it only has real value if the mood is right. And the mood is the primary point, that you can only express mood through form. There's no way to express mood without form. Right? I think those concepts kind of went out in the 50s and 60s, where he would sit around in telepathy and didn't move and just, you know, just thought, and that was like perfection. Now it's back to, you know, interaction. You know what I'm saying? So without a form, how can you express anything? Without language, without, you know, bodily, you know, the nuances that in the bodily interaction, without items, things, without situations, how do you express anything? Okay? So time, place, and circumstance means it's applying to the mood, right? Circumstance means the mood. Circumstance, the mood. The place is there, it's fixed. That's obvious. Right? The time, and according to the time of the day or the season or whatever it is, then, you know, you'll deal with that in a certain way. But then the final point is going to be the mood. If the mood's one way, you'll deal with all that in one way, if you're not in the other. So this is means time, place, and certainty. What is the environment, the place that you're dealing in? What is the time? What is appropriate for that time? Right? If it's midnight, do we have lunch? No. If it's noontime, do we have lunch? And then circumstance means the mood. But there's a very good chance that those who always quote time, place, and circumstance as an argument against Vedic culture wouldn't have a clue that this is what time, place, and circumstance mean. It's just a weapon to use against something that appears to be restrictive on my life. You know what I'm saying? So we have to be very, very careful to know that mood and form go together. They're separating, but at the same time. So that's a chinta veda veda tattva. Sometimes one, but different. Right? The mood has to be expressed through the most ideal form. And the form has to have the most ideal mood. So whatever is the best mood you can have, and whatever is the best form you can have, that combination, being done to please Krishna, that's devotional service. That's nectar devotion, the opening nectar devotion. That's the point being made. The whole nectar devotion is simply about being conscious, in that consciousness being God conscious, and that consciousness should be favorable to Krishna, free from karma and jnana. That is the nectar devotion. You understand that, you understand nectar devotion. You don't understand that, and you didn't understand it. So that's why Krishna conscious, Prabhupada says, has to be approached with a cool head, with maturity. Like that. It means what we have to offer is way beyond anybody else in the material world can offer. There's no one that can explain the mechanics of how this material world works, relationships, what is there, God, a living entity, the material energy, any of those things. No one, there's not one person who is not, who is outside of devotional service that can explain these things. Just isn't. So because this world is Krishna, so therefore using this world for Krishna, what's the problem? If Paramatma is anywhere, what's the problem if we use anything for Krishna? But the point is you're using it for Krishna, it's favorable to him, not to yourself. That's the regulator. Because then we say, oh, but if you see him everywhere and everything's Krishna, then you can use any old nonsense. Yes, you could use any old nonsense, but how is that nonsense pleasing to Krishna? Right? As a person. So that's what regulates. You have something? Supposed to avoid association with non-devotees in the shastra. Okay. What do you? Okay. How to apply the form that the shastra mentions of don't associate with non-devotees? What would be the move? Association means that basically your value system is the same, and on that same value system, you therefore share common activities. That's association. So, being in a workplace, then your value is different. They're in the workplace for money, or prestige, or whatever it is. We're there to connect it to Krishna, to please Krishna. We're there to get money, to engage ourselves, And in that workplace, we can see Krishna in so many ways. So even though we're in that environment, we're not associating with him. We're giving association. Does that make sense? So, and we see they're all servants of Krishna, just they don't know it. So according to how they don't know it, that's how we deal with them. You understand? You know, so if they think they're very special, we deal with them in that way. They're happy. You know, they think they're very beautiful or very competent, then we deal with them that. You know. You know what I'm saying? Someone worried about what they look like, you comment that, you know, wow, you look good today, you know, that's, you know, something nice tie, you know. Stuff like that, you know, and then they're very appreciative. Then the relationship develops. Then they're wanting to associate with you. It says you're connected to Krishna, and this way they'll be connected. But so you're dealing with them on their level, but not because of their rules, because of our rules. You have to understand that social interaction is our rules, not the karmic rules. But when you greet people, what you do, is there such a thing as when you first meet somebody of an interaction that's unique from other interactions? Right? You greet devotees, Hari Bol, or accept my humble obeisances, or pranams, or is there? Yeah. So what was first? That or you know, a handshake between businessmen? Which came first? You understand? So the whole point is language. God, they were speaking in the spiritual world language before it was happening here. Dress, economics. Nanda Baba pays tax to the Kshatriyas in Mathura. That's been going on way before, you know, the IRS ever figured out that they can make money off of people. You know what I'm saying? So this whole idea that there is a separate entity than a separate environment than Krishna, it's atheistic actually. It's God's. What it is material world means people are misusing and misunderstanding God's stuff. His society, his culture, his language, everything. It all came from him. The senses come from him. It says in the second canto. The universal form is there. He wants to taste. Therefore, he manifests tongue and things to taste. Because he's tasting, he tastes. We can't taste on our own. You know, what is 1/10,000 the tip of the hair going to do with a tongue that is, you know, millions of times bigger than him? You know, how is he going to operate? So it's because Krishna's tasting, therefore, we're getting the side benefit. If we see it in relation to him, we get more benefit. Then the taste is greater. You understand? So the point is it's not that there's us and them. There's only us. But some living entities don't understand that. So they're the ones that say that they're them. But otherwise, all there is servants of Krishna. That's all. It's Krishna's energy. It's all his. The way everything runs here is on God's laws. Right? You know what I'm saying? The Constitution of America doesn't define gravity, or people have to breathe or eat, or a need for relationship, or anything like that. It was already there in the first place. You know what I'm saying? But people don't recognize this. That's illusion. So Krishna consciousness is simply recognizing that fact. That's all. And since it's God, since it is God, since we're interacting to please God, what would be the nicest way to do that? Therefore, form. Recommended form. You don't have the best recommended form, you take second best. You don't have that third best. You don't have that tenth best. But you're basing it on what Krishna likes, not what I like. You know, and what does it matter if everybody else does? The point is even you greet a karmic and you shake their hand, if you do it mechanically, they'll think something's wrong. They also expect mood. So therefore, what mood is better than God consciousness? Do you understand? So all we have to do is learn from ourselves. But that means you have to think. That means you have to understand Krishna is non-dual. Everything is him. Not separate off the material energy, something separate that God doesn't work with, or you know, or we discussed the other day, you know,
Prabhupada, you know, from the spiritual world was, you know, the material world. You know, that's as stupid as saying Prabhupada knows the real tree on the bank, everything about it, its bark, its leaves, and its fruits and flowers and its usages and everything, but he in no way can understand the reflection in the water. That you have to leave to us Americans. Right? That is stupid. But I heard it fall out of the mouth of devotees. And I'm not even talking junior devotees. You know what I'm saying? Why? Because they're actually not following Vaishnavism. That philosophy, this dualistic idea, it comes from other religions, mundane religions. It doesn't come from Vaishnavism. Material world, how does it function according to world religions? There's a guy called Satan or whatever, Beelzebub or whatever you want to call him, that runs this place, and it went out of hand. God made it, but it went out of his control, and now somebody else runs it. Is that our philosophy? So then to say it's Kali Yuga, you can't follow all these things, it's different, it's America, it's different. What does that mean? What religion is that? It's not Vaishnavism. Yeah. It's one of these mundane dualistic religions. So Prabhupada says, philosophy without religion is mental speculation. Think about it. What do devotees spend their time arguing over in meetings? Do we follow Varnashram, do we not follow Varnashram? Should we call it something else? That's mental speculation. You understand? Why? Because there's no religion. Religion is the form. The philosophy defines the form and the mood. And religion is the form that the mood is expressed through. You don't have a form. Where is the devotion? Where is the social interaction? Where is relationships? So the whole point is that it's not that it's something different. It's a matter of we have the right consciousness, then wherever you are, you're perfectly situated. And anybody who comes in contact with you is very fortunate. Right? Because they're just awash in the material world and they come in contact with the devotee. So you don't have to change what you do, because whatever you're doing comes from God anyway. It's just a matter of keep it to its best form.
So now what religion do you say that you follow?
What religion do? Religion are you following now?
You know what I'm saying? Because you go out there and just do whatever you do to get by. But where does that, where does get by come from? What religion is that? Religion is the inherent nature of something you can't change. Right? So a dog has this religion, a cow has this religion. So human religion is one option. But it's not the form of it which we always mistake it for. It's the mood of it. And then where you can apply the form, nice, like there. I just explained how you work at a job. That was a form. It works perfectly. It worked in any company that worked. If I brought all the heads of multinational companies, all the CEOs, and explained to him that this is what the Vedas say is the proper person who works for you, would any one of them disagree? No. Why? Because it's universal. It's God's law. That's what we mean. God's law is universal. This idea that, well, no time, place, it doesn't apply. That means you're separating off this creation from God and thinking it works according to your mentality. It doesn't. It works according to God's law, not according to how we think it works. Right? That's why people fail in the world, because they think it's something different. Right? You know what I'm saying? You go get on the horse, and the horse throws you off on the ground. Someone who knows horses gets on the same horse, doesn't get thrown on the ground. What's the difference? Yeah, he knows that, he knows the rules, he knows the science. So when we know the science, we're not bewildered. We can do anything, anywhere, for Krishna. That's the real yukta vairagya. Yukta means it's connected to God, not that I don't believe in the rules, so now I say whatever I want to do. That's not yukta. Not even by argument. Right? It's just a clever misuse of the term to get done basically economics. To be in control and to establish economics, that's all. It's not religion. Yukta Vairagya means that, okay, I accept the Krishna's authority, I accept his directions, I accept the tradition followed by the previous authorities, as this is good. Now, how close can I get that in the situation in the right this second? I try to bring that in line with that, in the mood of that. That's yukta vairagya. These other things aren't yukta vairagya. They're clever statements by people to simply maintain control of the situation or not be controlled. That's all. It's irreligious. But it's popular. No doubt it's popular. We always have to remember, Socrates was one man, and the people who developed the concept of vox populi, you know, the sophists, they were many, and they got rid of them. But now, you know, 2,000 years later, everybody's heard the name Socrates. How many have heard the name of the sophists? Hardly anybody. But those are the guys who got rid of them. Those are the guys that started Vox Populi in the modern context. Nobody's ever heard of it. So that's the point, is it doesn't matter how many people think it's great and misuse these terms, Varnashram, this, that. It doesn't matter. The eternal laws are there, and they don't change. They're not going to change. They never will change. It doesn't matter what we think and what we say, they won't change. Understand? So that means whatever situation you're in, you can be confident and God conscious. And your life doesn't, and the form that it's in doesn't have to change at all. You have to change the consciousness. And by changing your consciousness, you're not associating with others who have less consciousness. Right? They're giving, you're giving them. But if you meet others that have the same consciousness, there you associate, there you be intimate with, there you open up and share. Otherwise, you move through the world untouched. Sukadeva Goswami is walking around with, you know, a bunch of kids and ladies harassing and this and that. It doesn't matter. You know, they're happy. It's cool. You understand? But he was not associating with them. He was giving his association, though they weren't taking much advantage of it. But when it came to the sages, then he associated with them. Right? Because they were like mine. Is that okay? Does that work? Is it practical? Okay. So we'll end here with the time. Yeah.